For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
I'm Douglas Floyd. I am the temple director and president of the board of directors at Ancient Dragon Zengate. Our teacher, Taigen Dan Leighton, is in the Netherlands leading the program. And so I'm talking to you. I wanted to follow up on my discussion last week of one of Dogen's principles for practicing the way, talk about Zazen. And to talk about Zazen is really, at least for us in the Soto Zen school, we really start from the chant that we chanted tonight, the Fukan Zazen Gi, which is chanted every evening after Zazen in Soto Zen Monastery. And it's one of the first things that Dogen wrote when he got back from China. Dogen was the Japanese monk who founded our school of Zen in the 13th century. And the importance of this essay for him is shown by the fact that while it was one of the first things he wrote after returning from China, he continued to work on it and create new versions for the rest of his life. And it's interesting that if you compare the Fukan Zazen Gi to other meditation manuals from earlier times in other schools, it's clear that Dogen and other had gotten his much of the material that's in here from other Zen manuals, which had also come from Tiantai manuals. And while some of the other manuals are very straightforward and mechanical and go into a lot of detail about how to practice meditation, Dogen's added some literary flourishes to reflect the time he was living in. And also really challenge the understanding of meditation and its place in Buddhist practice as it existed back then and as we all come to it today. And that is the usual practice for the almost the entire duration of Buddhism's existence is that meditation was, there were many different kinds of meditation, but the different practices similar to what we do in Zazen were really part of two different practices or two phases of practice. And in Tiantai Buddhism, which is the form of Buddhism that Dogen had practiced before he had then practiced Zen a little in Japan and then studied in China, was what's called stopping and seeing, or in other schools of Buddhism, they would be called shamatha and vipassana. So calming and concentration, shamatha, vipassana, insight, meditation. So you would practice meditation, especially concentration, and calm the mind and develop a good bit of concentration. And that was cultivated either for those experiences of concentrated states or by practicing concentration and quieting the mind. You were ready to take on meditation subjects that would lead to the development of prajna, the development of wisdom. Or just the concentration itself would give rise to prajna. So meditation was always an instrument of some sort. You practiced it so something good would happen to you, qualities, become awakened, become calmer, attain realizations. And, you know, we have to say that that's really what everybody here in this room probably came to Zen, assuming, right, that meditation was something you were going to do in order to calm down and maybe get a clearer mind, or, and by practicing it, maybe you perhaps figure some things out, or at least you would make you feel pretty good and very Zen all the time. And Dogen says, nope, that's not it. I'm sorry. This is not a practice about doing something in order to get somewhere else. And in fact, if you if you're doing that, you're deluded, because the practice of Zazen itself is the function of prajna. It's the exercise and expression of wisdom by itself. And his basic point begins, if you want to take a look at the Fukan Zazengi in the chant books, you know, he begins with saying the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent on practice and realization? The true vehicle is self-sufficient. What need is there for special effort? Indeed, the whole body is free from dust. Who could believe it in a means to brush it clean? And this view of the school of thought, Tathagatagarbha, which had developed in East Asia before then, which was very influential in Zen, the idea that the entire universe is inherently awakened being, also carries over to discussions of the mind. There's always a blurring about discussions of what the world looks like ultimately and what our mind is like. And Dogen's point is, right, the entire body, the entire universe is free from dust. There are no impurities from the standpoint of dustness and emptiness. And similarly, the mind has no really delusion or defilements. What appears in the mind is part of the awakened mind. We are inherently awakened. We are already Buddha, and we are already Buddhas. With that in mind, Dogen also sort of says, well, just look at this. I mean, if meditation were just a way to become enlightened, then why would the Buddha himself, who's born fully awakened, have grown up and then practiced intensively for 6 years? What was the point of doing that? And Bodhidharma, the Indian monk who's the semi-mythical founder of Zen, the great ancestor, fully enlightened ancestor who came to China from India and then sat in a cave facing a wall for 9 years meditating. What was the point of doing that? And Dogen's answer is that it is because sitting Zazen is itself the expression of awakening, and it is the expression of our awakened life. And he says that he contrasts that with a view that meditation is just instrumental. And he says, suppose you're confident in your understanding and rich in enlightenment, gaining the wisdom that knows at a glance, attaining the way and clarifying the mind, arousing an aspiration to reach for the heavens. You're playing in the entrance way, but you still are short of the vital path of emancipation. And he contrasts that with the idea, okay, you've had awakenings, you've figured things out, you understand doctrine very well, but that's not really the point. The point is to arouse bodhi, the awakened mind, and be able to not be caught up in the three poisons of attachment, aversion, and delusion, right? And then stepping outside of delusion, we not necessarily knowingly, live the Buddha life and express the Buddha way. He contrasts that whole instrumental thing with, you know, he's got descriptions. There's sort of a little bit of this that's nuts and bolts, you know, set out your cushions, make sure your clothes aren't too tight, cross your legs, sit up straight, take a few deep breaths, and so on. But in when you have adjusted your posture, take a breath and exhale fully, rock back and left and right, what happens? Then he says, you learn to take the backward step and shine, that turns the light and shines it inward. So you learn to not be caught up in the objects of attachment or fear or concern, anxiety. But having done that, becoming aware of our own concerns and grasping, he says, body and mind of themselves will drop away and your original face will manifest. If you want to attain suchness, practice suchness immediately. So how do we do that? And he goes on to say, he tells you, you know, all the nuts and bolts, but then he comes to the hard stuff, right? He says, do not think good or bad. Do not judge true or false. Give up the operations of mind, intellect, and consciousness. Stop measuring with thoughts, ideas, and views. Have no designs on becoming a Buddha. So, I mean, what's he saying here? You really have to stop thinking, because that's involved in everything. It's not really that. This is where he's talking about, okay, he's going to talk about the real hard part, the real hindrance and barriers to practicing Zazen. And that's not getting sleepy or daydreaming. That's, you know, you wake up, you come back awake. Or thoughts come up, random thoughts, you let them go away. The problem is, what happens is that we start thinking about our mental state now and how our Zazen's going. You know, is it good? Is it bad? Am I calm enough? Am I not calm enough? I don't really understand. Hey, boy, I just had five clear breaths in which I didn't lose track at all. If I just have another 250 of these, and I've really sat a good meditation period. Or you start explaining and talking to yourself about what Zazen is. Okay, well, how does that stop? Does he say stop, cut it off? He does not say stop, cut it off. He does not say stop thinking, stop having consciousness, right? He says, think of not thinking. Not thinking. What kind of thinking is that? Beyond thinking. This is the essential art of the Zazen. It's very, very helpful. Okay, what's the difference between not thinking and non-thinking? And what's clear, I mean, you know, there are all sorts of echoes that you'd already be familiar with from some things we've talked about here in the past. So the very old Zen poem, the Shinshin Ming, the faith in mind that begins, you know, the Tao is not difficult, just drop off liking, disliking, picking and choosing. And that similarly appears in some key koans, along with the whole idea of, well, what are you doing? I'm not thinking, I'm non-thinking. And Dogen picks that up. So what is that? You know, it's what you already know. It's something hard to explain, but it's easy to experience, right? Just sitting, and you know what thinking is. You know what conscious awareness is and mental activity, and we know what, at least theoretically, what not thinking would be, and not having any conscious activity. That's not it, right? Because that would just turn you into a lump of meat. And that's not the point of Buddhism. So non-thinking is sort of above that. It's not a mental activity. It is simply an activity that is aware of when there's a mental activity, when there isn't mental activity, without being caught up in it. And that's the part where we cut off thinking. And when we don't think good or bad, don't judge true or false, we give up the operations of mind. It's not that we cut them off. We're aware of both. We're not engaged in either thinking or non-thinking. So we are non-thinking. And at that point, you can imagine a lot of the problems that we face in Zazen are based on these misconceptions that we're trying to get somewhere else, and we're trying to experience a certain thing. So we end up straining to experience a certain thing and do Zazen properly, to concentrate very hard, to breathe correctly, and that sort of thing. That's not it. All of those things, all of the tension and anxiety that comes with that, and the frustrations sometimes that come with practicing Zazen, are because we have these gaining ideas. We're going to practice, we're going to do it right. And when we do it right, something good is going to happen. And that's not the point. The point is to sit and be awake with whatever comes up, good or bad, painful or not. And here's the secret, trying or not trying, right? You can't just stop. There is a level of, let's not say effort, but certainly conscious intention. But not trying intention, not straining intention, let's call it non-intention. Because you're aware of what's going on. You're aware that here I am, I'm sitting, I'm upright, I'm just sitting here. And then you can go, okay, I'm breathing hard. You don't have to go, stop, stop, stop. Just be aware, thoughts come up, they go away. And that includes effort and trying. So Zazen likes to call Zazen this Dharma gate of joyful ease. But it is also, at the same time that we step outside of the effort and the trying and the attempt to gain something, that becomes the zestful ease, and it is itself the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. That is the meat of the Buddha life. This practice of waking up and dropping off clinging and craving and desire. Doesn't mean that it goes away. It means that we are alive to it. We are not caught up in it. And we can engage with it appropriately, with skillful means. And the part that I'm very grateful for is that Dogen points out that if you do this, intelligence or lack of it is not an issue. Make no distinction between the dull and the sharp-witted. If you concentrate your efforts single-mindedly, that in itself is wholeheartedly engaging the way. Practice realization is naturally undefiled. Going forward is, after all, an everyday affair. And so, it's very comforting, perhaps, that our practice is not complete until we gain some understanding of Buddhist thought and we have some awakenings. But the real meat of it is this waking up and seeing through our grasping and craving. In the middle of this, just sitting here on the cushion and breathing, having thoughts come up, daydreams, random thoughts, whatever. Everyday mind is the way. Yes, everyday mind is the way. If it's this non-thinking. It's something very ordinary, something that we actually experience in ordinary lives, even if it hasn't been pointed out to us and explained to us, so that we don't understand the significance. This is not something that regular people who have not had Zazen instruction do not experience themselves. But it's not something they appreciate. and that it's not something that they are prepared to stay with. That's the difference, is that we are prepared to sit here and just sit here and not try to do something special with it. Having done that, we are urged to devote our energies to the way that points directly to the real thing. Revere the one who has gone beyond learning and is free from effort. Accord with the enlightenment of all the Buddhas. Succeed to the samadhi of all the ancestors. Continue to live in such a way, and you will be such a person. The treasure store will open of itself, and you may enjoy it freely. And that's all we need to say about that. Thank you. Does anyone have anything to say about their own zazen? I certainly find myself trying to do zazen the right way a lot of times. And the interesting thing is that, as I said, just daydreaming or falling asleep, those are easy distractions. And they're not really a problem in zazen. The problem is when we start thinking about, am I doing it right? Oh, this is good zazen. Oh, God, this is not working out at all. I'll hardly be aware. The interesting thing is we're not aware of the thinking. There, we identify with that function of our mind that's judging it and describing it and telling us what's good zazen and bad zazen. And part of this is learning to catch yourself doing that sort of thing. You don't cut it off, you just sit there and go, oh yeah, doing that again. And it will dissolve. Yes.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I think it's kind of important to realize that, like, I think that's something that gets, how is that, am I doing it right? And it's not even something I think, it's just almost like a stance or something, just a way of, that's all, you know, and it's all right, it's almost always there, like, am I doing it right, you know? And then I'm like,
that's exactly it, right?
Getting, you know, like, it's, so it's, that's very interesting to watch. But it's also, it sounds easy, but it's so...
Yeah, and it's not something that happens once and then we get to coast in the awakened mind, right? It's something, you know, we have to shed the delusion over and over and over, wake up over and over and over again in the same period, over and over and over again. It can be very subtle or very sneaky. Take your pick. You go, oh, okay, I'm trying very, very, very hard. Look, you're trying very hard. You're judging your zazen again. Fantastic, I figured that one out. I'm good now. You know, it's just okay, and then it recurs. So the good thing is that, the interesting thing is that waking up sucks. You get not just... a different perspective, an ability to be aware of what's going on, but energy comes out so that the mind doesn't stop, but it loses a certain amount of the power to hook you. It becomes easier sometimes. Yeah.
So we're talking a lot about the mind and everything, but there's also a lot about the body for this too. Can you say something about, you know, body's role in this whole
zazen? Sure. Well, I think it's certainly in Dogen's thinking. Dogen is very influenced by, he grew up in the Tiantai school, studying on the monasteries on Mount Hiei. And there's a lot of Tiantai philosophy in Dogen's thinking, but there's also, there's some other ideas that aren't, you wouldn't call them philosophy. Tiantai had taken a lot of esoteric Buddhism, sort of tantric Buddhism, when it came to China. And so there were ideas about, you know, it's hard to describe tantric thought and except to maybe call it magical Buddhism. So if there are correspondences, and especially, things happen. There are influences. So if you want to wake up like a Buddha, if you want to attain Buddhahood in this body and in this life, you learn to sit like a Buddha. And if you sit like a Buddha and think like a Buddha and say Buddha things by reciting mantras and dharanis, then you have awakened, you will have awakened mind. And I think it's also true that, you know, this is a, there's a sort of yogic aspect, it's fair to say. Just, you know, the whole idea of keeping your back straight and your head up contributes to that ability to wake up. So I think it's important to, you know, to, you'll have to try this yourselves, but I think that, you know, just sitting up straight gives us this awareness of just aliveness and awareness of experience. It's different from some meditation practices which require us to pay special attention to certain aspects of our experience, and other times actually concentrate on them very hard and try to avoid the distraction of any other element of experience. This is different. This is waking up. We're not paying attention to any special thing. We could, you know, you're really... We practice sitting up straight and maintaining our posture, keeping our eyes open, and being aware of what's going on with our breath. But we're really not concentrating on the breath and trying to have this very clear perception of every part of an inhalation and every part of an exhalation. That's not what we're doing. Just being aware of the breath and keeping track of the breath keeps us grounded here so that we don't drift away and get into the woo-woo stuff. Yes?
This question, I want to ask you, do you think there's such a thing as lazy zazen? And what I'm trying to get at is, so we're just sitting, we're sitting upright, we're not making effort to do something or get somewhere, but there is, some, I'm not sure what the word is, there is some, something is required of us.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't do that, then it's late. The opposite of that is lazy. So, and this is what I struggle with. It's like, how do I not be grieving myself but not be lazy? It's a very, and I don't quite even have the words for it, but.
Well, I always think that it is an intentional activity.
Yeah.
And I think of it as being willing to do this, more than willing it. And that may be a distinction that doesn't make any sense at all. But I do think that, you know, there are times when we get caught up in distraction and sleepiness, for example, or just fatigue is the big one. But, you know, and some people are, will say, well, if I'm just going to daydream my time away on the cushion, forget it, and get up and go away. And Dogen is in the as I talked about last week, he's very big on saying, you know, this isn't about just doing practice that's easy. I think that sitting there with the distraction, with the fatigue, and then coming up less frequently than usual and becoming aware, there's a huge value in that, I think. I think that I think that's it. When Zazen would be what you would consider to be its most frustrating, and you stay there and awakening appears even in the middle of that from time to time, I think that there's a huge value in that. In learning just to wake up. Right? And I think it's important to point out that Dogen keeps saying, right, that this is that when you are practicing non-thinking, right, this is when the ultimate reality appears of itself. And the ultimate reality is just this, what everybody sees, everybody hears, smells, tastes, thinks about, touches, whatever. It's not like there's some secret essence and we pierce that through our practices. But we drop off the grasping and thinking of that turns us inward and separates us from the world. Or that, on the other hand, makes us think of the things in our life as objects to be desired or to be feared. When that drops off, then we become intimate with our life. It's not that our life is not one experience of a polarity after another. It's me and that. Me and my boss, me and my work, me and my children. Absolutely. You know, there will be a book, The Tao of Westworld, before we're done, right? So, anything else? So everybody's just great with Zazen. They never get frustrated. Okay, good.